Hello and welcome to Yamaha Music's podcast, Artist Insights. My name is Phoebe Ely, and I'm going to be taking you behind the scenes to give you an exclusive insight into the lives and journeys of some of Yamaha's leading artists. Joining me today is the ridiculously talented young percussionist, Adelaide Ferreira. Not only has she taken the international stages by storm, she has been heralded by the press as personifying the arrival of percussion on the classical stage. She is the winner of over 15 international prizes, and in addition to this, she received the award of Revelation Soliste Instrumental at the 24th Victoire de la Musique Classique, becoming the first percussionist to be nominated for an award at this event. She has gone on to perform in some of the most famous concert halls and festivals worldwide, as well as working with the likes of Philippe Perel, Vanessa Benelli-Mossel, and Martin Matalon, to name but a few. Adelaide is leading the way forward in percussion for the next generation, and I'm delighted to have her with me here today. Adelaide, thank you for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm fine, and you?
Good. I'm very well, thank you. We're very, very happy to have you here today. Now, I know you were born to a family of musicians and that music is very much at the heart of your bloodline. I'm wondering if I can take you back to the very start of where it all began. So I wonder, what is your first memory of live music? And do you remember the impact that it had on you as a child?
My first memories were really the stage memories, because my father was the principal timpanist in the orchestra. And so he just brought me with him during the rehearsals at the opera. And I was backstage and I was just enjoying the whole thing. And so this was my main memories as a kid.
That's amazing. How old were you when you remember that first moment where you were sat in the audience watching your father?
I think I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. That's so incredible. And I know you started out on the piano, didn't you? So what made you fall in love with the marimba?
I think really the sound, the warm sound and just, yes, this amazing wood keyboard. And but yes, I started with the piano, and I think I really like both, because there are two keyboards, distinct keyboards, and there is so much things to make with a marimba, with a repertoire to discover, to develop everything. And I really love both the keyboards.
Wow, that's so incredible. And I love that you had that natural instinct to kind of move onto the marimba. And like you said, those different sounds, it's just incredible. And it's very rare that every single young percussionist will go on to develop a career as a soloist. So I wonder, how did your path into this area of work evolve?
I think I wanted to make the marimba as the piano, just to become a soloist, but not with the piano, just to put the marimba in the same thing as the piano was in the classical music. So this is why I started to do a lot of classical transcriptions, just to arrange the works from piano repertoire to the marimba, and just to offer the classical festivals and organizers a classical recital with the percussion. And so this was the first thing, and then just of course to play all the beautiful contemporary repertoire we have, and not only of the marimba, but just to enjoy all the possibilities of the percussion, and just move from one instrument to one another, and have this plurality of sounds and versatility.
That's so amazing. And you are notorious for transcribing works that you love for marimba. And one of the things that I love about what you do is that you're constantly finding these ways of reaching new audiences. And you've done this recently by recording these transcriptions that we spoke about and mentioned outside of the usual concert hall setting. And the most terrifying but impressive video that I watched of you was your performance of Rhapsody in Blue, where you're performing on the rooftop in New York, looking utterly fearless and stunning and just totally at ease, even though you're stood on the edge of this incredible high building and performing an intricate piece in a totally different musical environment. So I'm wondering where you get your ideas for content creation, and why do you feel that this mix of imagery and playing is so important for generating new audiences and developing interest to a wider set of people?
So I think when I was starting my career as a soloist, I was like, okay, I need to show the audience that classical marimba is possible. So this is why I started to make some videos. And I wanted to create not only just a captation of the work, but really to put a scenery with it, just to make the marimba being a character of a story in the video. And so the first one that I did was with one study from John Psattas in a helpline in the airport. I was like, okay, I need to create something related to the work also, and not only to choose a place just like this and say, okay, I'm going to make it here because it's beautiful. No, I wanted to create really a link between the music and the video. And so, for example, for the airplane airplane video, the story of the work is just to imitate a motor. So I was like, okay, yeah. A motor, just not a car motor because it's like, you know, too basic, and yeah. I was like, okay, why not an airplane? and it started like this, and then the further videos that I made, I was still trying to reach this idea. So I did it with Jean-Sébastien Bach, Toccata in E minor, in a castle, so to just make a link between the architecture of the castle and the architecture of of a Bach toccata with four movements in four different places in the castle. And for the Rhapsody, actually, it was totally average because I was going to do a concert in Indianapolis and the plane connection was in New York. And I was like, okay, I have 2 days in New York. I have to do something there. And and I was recording the Rhapsody in Blue. And I decided just to do this incredible image of New York that everyone can imagine. So just the skyline and
yeah, it was incredible. And the thing that struck me was just how comfortable you looked just at the top of a building that was just miles in the sky. And I'm wondering how much, like, does that change the way you perform? Even though it's a pre-recording, when you describe being in the castle and all of that for the Bach, how does it influence your own playing when you're in that moment and it's a completely different musical environment? What does it give to you?
I think, of course, it gives inspiration. And yes, I think it's it makes the piece more beautiful because you are in the moment and you're capturing all the environment. And And so, of course, yes, it adds a dimension, I think.
Yeah, a different dimension. Is it a different dimension, I imagine, to the feeling that you get when you feed off the audience as well? I bet it's almost like feeding off the surroundings, I guess, and the architecture in a different way.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Beautiful. So beautiful. So I'm wondering, what does it feel like to you to go on stage as a soloist versus going on stage as part of the orchestra? Do you prepare differently for each type of engagement that you're going into, or is it very much a similar process?
I think it's very much the similar process. Of course, there's perhaps more stress when you're going solo.
Yeah.
Because you're all alone. But no, it's quite a different thing. So I try to just do a little warming up before I go on stage, and just also some mental preparation, just visualizing the stage, the audience, the things you're going to play. And yeah, that's it.
That's amazing. And you won a place at the Paris Conservatoire when you were only 15 years of age, which is just incredibly young. How did you find your time at Conservatoire, and what did you find the biggest challenge to be that you faced during your training?
I think it was related to because the conservatory was the beginning of the professional aspect of my musician work. So it was the beginning of my solo concerts and just my my work with the contemporary repertoire also.
Yeah.
So I think it was the main challenge to switch from my student life to the professional life.
Yeah. How did that look for you? How did you manage that transition?
I think it was quite fluent because it was getting more and more, and so I didn't feel the difference, I guess.
Yeah, it just felt natural to go into that world, and it just happened naturally. And in certain institutions, there can sometimes be an overriding intensive focus on technique, which is understandable. Did you find this was the case for you? And if so, how did you keep that natural, instinctive love of playing throughout your training?
I think it was not the case. It was really on the technique, of course, because you need it.
You need it, exactly.
But not only, we had so many different projects in chamber music, in ensemble and orchestra as well. So it was really focused on the artistic way. And I think I feel very lucky to have had the studies, because it was, I think, amazing.
Yeah, gave you the foundation that you needed to move on. It's incredible. As I mentioned, you're taking this industry by complete storm and leading the way forward for young percussionists worldwide. But I'm interested to know, you're experiencing all of this success at the incredibly impressive age of 25. What is the biggest personal obstacle that you faced to get to the point in your career that you're at today? And how has it impacted your playing?
Oh, that's a tough one.
It is a tough question.
Well, I think lately it was the COVID crisis. I think we've all been very impacted by this, because I was releasing my CDs, and there was a lot of concerts planned and a lot of things going on. And suddenly it all stopped. So it was a shock, I think, for everyone. And coming back to the stage was something quite difficult, because it was, you know, 2 months it was open and then reclosed, and so it was really a difficult time to keep the motivation going on, to keep the love for your passion as well. So I think it's been very difficult, and maybe the greatest obstacle that I had in my career was really this crisis, because just to manage the time and keep going on. But
fortunately, things are looking back. How did it feel when you had that time? Because you'd been such an intensive sort of non-stop career so far, because it's just taken off so quickly. How did it feel when you then went back into the first performance that you did when you'd not performed for a while? Did you have any sense of internalized nerves?
But it was quite natural. I mean, it was like things never stopped. It was very natural to come back on stage, because, it was like nothing happened, and
it felt like coming home, I bet.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's and, so wonderful.
But I remembered I was really, really tired after the recital, because we were not in the same rhythm than just going on with concerts and just having 3 month break and then just coming back on stage. It was like, okay, I just run a marathon or something.
I can imagine. It's when your body's in that kind of groove of going to gigs and doing it regularly, and then suddenly it's that shock and feels bigger almost in terms of energy. So I'm sure you gave so much to that. And you once said in an interview, Adelaide, that your hope is that percussion will gain more recognition, and that many percussionists have the same desire to move the instrument forward, but it's also about the image. Can you describe what image you want to give to young percussionists hoping to follow in your footsteps, and why you feel it's so important in the industry as it stands today?
I think the percussion has always had an image just back in the orchestra, and where just, you know, chamber music is not possible, classical music is not possible, and being a soloist, it's no way possible.
Yeah.
So, of course, this image is changing, and I think the main thing I want to say, it's possible. If you want it, it's possible. And also to say that the percussion, I think, is an instrument where you have most of the possibilities. You have the greatest possibilities of sound, of repertoire, and just building it. And the marimba especially, because everyone say we have no repertoire, and you can be as expressive with the marimba as the piano, but I don't agree. The marimba can be an instrument as the piano is, and so I think, yeah. This is the message.
Oh, it's so incredible to hear you talking about it, because what was really coming up for me was that feeling that I get when I watch you, you have, in my opinion, this incredible magnetism when you watch you, when you're performing. You have this way of just internally pulling people in from the audience, and it's so incredibly beautiful. And I'm wondering, how does that internalized world look to you? What's going through your head when you perform? What's the overriding feeling that you want to give?
I think the main feeling I want to give is just to bring the audience somewhere, just to have a moment on stage. This is why the live music is so important, because you just feel something in the moment. So this is, the most important thing. And just when I play, just to, bring them into emotional experience, and just also, of course, discover the marimba, the repertoire and everything. But it's really a sharing moment.
That's really special, and it's so, it shows in your playing. It absolutely shows. It's beautiful. And I'm wondering now, you are such a leading light for young percussionists all over the world. I'm wondering, who was Adelaide's massive leading light when you were their age? So say you're, 12, 13, who was the biggest inspiration in your musical journey growing up?
I think I was really inspired by Hélène Grimaud. The French pianist, because 12 years old actually was the age where I decided to become a professional musician. Wow. And so I was really inspired by her career, because I think she's an amazing pianist, and she has so magnetism as well on stage. It's incredible. So that's one of my inspiration.
That's amazing. I love that. And in terms of learning pieces, what is your go-to approach to getting the music fully into your body and your soul? Because as a singer myself, we have many different ways of memorizing, but I'm wondering what you do to internalize that music from a percussive perspective.
I think it's just to consider the piece in its whole way, and also in all the details. And it's the combination of both. To look very, very close and then very, very far, just to get the two dimensions of seeing. And I think that's this that can just put your interpretation further, and then you had your own way. But you need to really be focused on the score, and just to try to reach the composer's idea. And it's all analyzing thing and work. So
I can imagine. And you have performed on so many incredible stages, and you've performed on TV, live TV, on radio. If you had to go back in time to one performance only that you could relive, what would that performance be and why?
I think it will be the ceremony of the Victoire de la Musique, because it was one of my first big stage and live TV, and I remember it was incredible to share the stage with such amazing artists, and just to be recognized officially as a soloist for the first time. So I think that will be that one.
Very big moment. And how did you feel when you were waiting to go on stage and you'd been surrounded by these incredible artists and it was your turn? What was that? What did that moment look like for you?
I think I was just, it was a little bit surrealist, especially the performance itself, because it was like a dream. Just I walk in and then I walked out, and I didn't know what happened. But backstage, it was really a sharing moment, very, very chill. Yeah. And I think, very friendly and very nice memory.
Yeah, just didn't feel nervous. It was just a case of, I'm here, I've done the work, and I'm going to go on and do my best.
That's so incredible.
Kind of. Oh, that's interesting. Why kind of? Was there any
little stress?
Okay, tell me about that.
I was a little nervous, but not during the performance, but really before. And I remember when I got into the building, I was like, okay, I will do it. It will be okay. But before, it was like, I was so nervous and really stressed for it. But
I can imagine such a huge thing, especially you must have been not very much. How old were you? 21, 22?
20.
20. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That's enough for anyone to get nervous at a much older age. But 20 years old, that's incredible. Your nerves of steel, incredible. How do you mentally prepare for that? Because you're 20 years old. You're at the very start of this. You're surrounded by big, huge names. How do you mentally go into that zone, Adelaide? How do you get there?
I think I always did it even to prepare, you know, some exams, conservatory exams, or small recitals. And the main thing is just in the mental preparation and just visualizing things, you know, just to see you enter in stage and just imagine you with no stress and just you're doing to do this the right way and it's going to be okay. So yes, it was really a mental preparation, but also not for the Victoire de la Musique, but for example to prepare my entrance at the Paris Conservatory. It was a really physical program, and I was only 15 years old, and so there was of course also physical preparation, so just to eat well and you know, just having a lifestyle quite good.
Do you have to feel that you have to sacrifice anything because of the career that you do? Obviously, it is such a physical thing. And, you know, in terms of the singer point of view, going out with your friends the night before a gig is sometimes not the best thing and not the easiest thing to do because you can't, your voice might not be there. What do you feel that you may have had to sacrifice yourself in terms of your own professional life versus personal?
I don't feel I had to sacrifice something because also the thing with musical life that's good, it's that of course you're playing with people and then people become your friends, so you know, everything is linked. So you just go on stage and then you're going out after the concert to celebrate it, and so I don't think there is any sacrifice in it because it just it's in a different way.
Yeah, it's very different. I understand. And you are at the start of a very long and successful career ahead. But I am interested to know, how would you like to be remembered in this industry, Adelaide, and what legacy do you hope to leave behind?
I just want to share the music and just to feel it. I don't need any legacy or recognition. I think the best recognition is just to do this passion as long as I can. And just to share this as long as possible with the audience and just sharing these incredible moments of on stage.
Oh, so beautiful. Your parents must be so incredibly proud. I have reached the final question now. It's been such a huge joy to share this time with you, Adelaide, but I have reached my final question, which I ask all guests on Artist Insights, and that is, what piece of advice would you give to an 18-year-old Adelaide?
I think I have like three advices. Just practice. The first one, the main one. Always doing things for the music and never give up on your passion.
That's amazing. Great advice to yourself and to many others that will be watching this and listening to this that are hoping to follow in your footsteps. Thank you so much for joining me on Yamaha Artist Insights, Adelaide. You've been a joy.
Thanks to you.
If you enjoyed today's episode and want to learn more about Yamaha and our artists, please do tell your friends about the show and subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. We'll see you next time for another episode of Artist Insights with Yamaha.